Spiritual understanding emerges over time. We know that that's true from our own individual experience, but it's also true as we look back on the scriptural record, because we understand humanity's relationship with God to be an evolutionary one, rooted in the events of our history. This historical understanding of God can be contrasted with a kind of Eastern view of God, which is cosmic. God is above historical time and place. Whereas our God, our Jewish Christian God, is a God who makes God's self known through the ongoing and unfolding events of our historical lives. The Old Testament lesson this morning, that wonderful story about the golden calf, tells us such a lot about a particular point in time between the relationship of God and humanity. The people are lonely. Moses has been gone for 40 days. And the God whom they associate with Moses' presence is therefore gone for 40 days. And they're at the bottom of the mountain. And so they turn to Aaron. Aaron's the priest. And one thing that you need to know is that priests are much more practical than prophets. So Aaron sets about finding a solution. So he invites them to give him all the gold that they had stolen from the Egyptians, and he melts it down, and lo and behold, this wonderful golden calf emerges almost miraculously from the furnace. Well, that's the way he explains it to Moses. And in this story, we see one of those amazingly cathartic moments in the history of God's relationship with humanity. The God of the Torah reacts to things in a very human way when they don't go according to his plan. When God is crossed, he rises to the heights of rage, threatening to obliterate the people. This God is a passionate lover and brooks no infidelity. And in the story of the golden calf, we make two crucial and startling discoveries. The first is that God can be reasoned with. This God, who's supposed to be eternal and unchanging, can be negotiated with. As Moses shames him into not fulfilling his promise to obliterate the people, Moses says, "Look, God, why do you want to do this thing? You've brought us out of the land of Egypt. And what will all the nations around say when they see that the people that you brought out with great power, only to what? Destroy them in the wilderness?" And that leads to the second discovery. God can change his mind. And here lies something very deep about the nature of relationship. Because no real relationship can exist where either party to the relationship lacks the power to make an impact on the other. So what does God learn from this incident? Because it's interesting that when you read the rabbi's commentary on this text, they're very clear that in the incident of the golden calf, God learns something very important, which is that humanity needs something more tangible. And so what God does after this incident is he gives elaborate instructions to the Hebrews about how to build the tent of meeting and the golden altar that also has horns on its corners. We learn something in this story about God's learning that humanity can't be left to deal with too much loneliness. Because when God is absent, we find idols to substitute. Now, you and I live in a period of history when, for the last 300 years, the relationship between God and humanity has been changing in the direction of more and more distance between us. The medievals understood that God was right here. God was in the altar. God was in the sacred vessels. God was in the priest. God was in the congregation. God was intersected in multiple layers within the everyday experience of life. And then what happens after the Enlightenment is that God becomes this grand architect of the universe who creates the universe like a clockwork mechanism, and it then begins to run itself. And all human beings have to do is keep tinkering and putting a little oil here and there. And the image that comes to me is that God packs his bags and he goes on a vacation, leaving human beings in charge of the machine. And we are so lonely, strutting about at the center of the stage. Finding substitutes to fill the chasm of our loss. Like the Hebrews, we construct idols, golden calves to worship. There's the most obvious idol of scientific progress. There's another idol of materialism and material prosperity. We are the authors of our own well-being. But the third idol is very poignant for us at this particular moment. It's the celebration of celebrity. We have become a culture where we no longer celebrate achievement. What people actually do, what they actually build. We celebrate success and popularity. That's how people appear. So we now are focused on not what people do, but how they appear. We are increasingly living into a reality that's virtual and not real. A reality of shiny surfaces and ever-shifting perspectives based on appearance and not on substance. And celebrity culture is always changing. You know, the eruptions in Hollywood and Weinstein and all the horror of how could this man get away with it for so long. Well, he got away with it because everybody else colluded with him. Until something happens and then it all changes again. Our culture feeds on celebrity, which is by its very nature not only unreal but unstable. And it exacerbates our feelings of uncertainty and deepens the crisis of our vulnerability. We may be popular one minute and cast down the next. That's the subtext of Facebook and all other forms of social media. We can appear successful and happy and popular. And it feeds a deep anxiety and stress that keeps growing in us. Social media is the perfect example of an idol that is not real. It cannot deliver what it promises. And remember the title to that song, Will You Still Love Me Tomorrow? And like the golden calf, our idols increasingly fill the gap created by our loss of tangible relationship with God. And this causes us to plunge even deeper into despair. So what's the solution? Well, the parables of Jesus are not about morality, they're about relationship, they're about discipleship. Jesus challenges us to move beyond the limits of our idols, the product of only what we're able to imagine for ourselves. And the expectations of God's kingdom, thy will be done on earth as it is in heaven, break into our safe but lonely experience, forcing us to draw uncomfortable comparisons between what we are prepared to settle for and what God desires for us. The God of Moses demanded obedience. Where the God of Moses is passionate and jealous, the God of Jesus is compassionate and extravagant. And the God of Jesus calls us into a relationship of discipleship in which we find the courage to live and work for more than we can imagine as possible. And only discipleship leads us to the discovery that in the midst of feeling alone and lost, we are already found. One commentator, David Ewart, puts it this way: there may indeed be more joy in heaven over one sinner who repents, but the parables are more about the joy to be had on earth from hearing the good news of the extravagant God who risks all to search for each one of us personally. Our God isn't sitting passively off somewhere in heaven, waiting for someone to bring news that a sinner has repented today. Our God is out there, actively searching for us. And we can complain as much as we like about how distant God feels, The real question is not, can we find God? The real question is, will we let God find us? Amen.